me, Elie Krug with Elie 2.0 Radio. I am thrilled. Ah, that's the right phrase. Thrilled to be here talking to you yet again. And the, you know, the beginning of March, which here in Minnesota, we've had one, like really one real snowstorm the whole winter. And, you know, hey, just good for us, not so good for our grandkids with this global warming. Okay, enough about the weather report. We have a great show today. The big interview is with someone who, like me, engages in diversity and inclusion training and who's also experiencing firsthand the pushback about that that's going on across America. And in my C block, I'm going to talk about a horrible incident involving a younger non-binary human who died in Oklahoma. Don't miss that. You know, just horrible, horrible incident. And this will be my very first time publicly that I'm talking about it. But here in my A block, okay, I want to talk about something that relates to a prior show that we did. You may recall that back at the end of January, I highlighted PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, an organization that started in the 1970s at a time when LGBTQ people were just coming out publicly after Stonewall. And PFLAG is a support organization, does incredible work for families with LGBTQ plus family members and friends. Now, you may recall that show, okay? Well, put a pin in that for a moment, okay, about PFLAG. You may also recall, not particularly from a show, although I'm sure I've talked about it, is that Texas has a bully for an attorney general. In particular, for several years, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has set his sight on transgender children and youth and their families. For example, a couple years ago, he directed the Texas Child Welfare Agency to investigate families who allowed their children to receive gender-affirming care, with the grave risk of the Texas Welfare Agency taking the children out of their families because their parents love them enough to affirm their gender identities. I mean, so it's this guy, Ken Paxton. All right, now, against that backdrop of both the things that I've just talked about, I want to now talk about how Ken Paxton has set his sights on the national headquarters for PFLAG. As reported by Erin Reed, you may recall Erin. She is a transgender blogger who I've previously had on the show. I refer to her quite a bit because she just does incredible reporting about legislation and other events affecting the transgender community across America. According to Erin Reed, and this is a piece that she dropped a couple of days ago, Ken Paxton has issued a written demand, that the national PFLAG identify its Texas transgender members. Yeah. And the doctors who treat those members and any contingency plans that Texas citizens have made or are in the process of making to leave Texas in the face of anti-transgender laws. Now, think about this. I mean, the Texas Attorney General, who has all kinds of power, sends a letter. It's called a written demand to the National PFLAG organization saying, I want everything you have on your Texas PFLAG members. Think about that. Apparently, PFLAG has about 1,500 members in Texas. Many of them are trying to plan for when Texas enacts a ban on gender-affirming care. Currently, there's legislation working its way up in the Texas legislature to ban gender-affirming care, and PFLAG is working to line up out-of-state doctors who can help those families continue to get the gender-affirming care or start with it for their children. Because, I mean, if you're transgender, you do not want to reach puberty. Okay, for transgender girls, it's because they're going to have this kind of voice that Elie Krug has, this voice that you hear every week, which, of course, at this point, you're fairly comfortable with, I hope. Okay, but let me tell you, I joke around, but it's true. It's not very good for me getting a date. And at times, it's not very good for me to be safe. Okay. In the Attorney General, in the Texas Attorney General's demand letter, Ken Paxton's demand letter, it seeks to require PFLAG to disclose such things as the names of its Texas members, their social security numbers, their dates of birth, their home and business addresses, their phone numbers, and personal and business email addresses. It's a damn sweeping and Nazi-like phishing expedition. That's exactly what it is. In response, PFLAG has gone to court to block Ken Paxton's demand for information, thank God, and in part claims that Paxton's demand is in retaliation for PFLAG opposing the anti-transgender and gender-affirming care legislation that's making its way through the Texas legislature. So PFLAG's saying publicly, it's wrong for you to pass these laws, and now the Attorney General in Texas wants to go after the critic of that, okay? PFLAG. In essence, Paxton is asking for the Texas, you know, the escape plans of Texans. And the irony here is that those escape plans exist because of Paxton and other Republicans. This is literally 1984. Okay, George Orwell would love this. He would have loved to have this. Thankfully, PFLAG has some great legal representation to resist Paxton's demand for information. That includes Lambda Legal. I've talked about Lambda before. The ACLU, both the national and Texas branch of ACLU, and a private law firm, Arnold and Porter. I'm especially thrilled to see Arnold and Porter involved. They are one of the biggest and most respected law firms in the country. You may recall last week or 2 weeks ago, we had Susan Williams on from the Transformation Project. And remember, she took on the state of South Dakota when South Dakota breached a contract with her nonprofit. And the law firm that helped her was Robbins Kaplan out of Minneapolis because they got a bunch of idealists there. I'm going to work to have some of those idealists on my show. I think that would be really important. Really nice. All right. Well, listen, I'm going to keep tabs on this case with PFLAG and Paxton as it goes forward. I'll report further, hopefully. In the meantime, do me a favor. Would you consider donating to Lambda Legal? Just Google Lambda Legal. Or the ACLU in Texas or nationally. I already support the ACLU both nationally and here in Minnesota. We all need to have skin in this game. We do. And this is horrible. And it's just the harbinger of how much worse it can get. I would never, if you came to me 2 years ago, even 2 years ago, and said, this is going to happen, I would have laughed. I would have said, nah, it'll never get that bad. I would have said that. And now it is that bad. And I'm scared to death. Really, I am. About how much worse it may get. Okay, that's me, Ellie Krug on Ellie 2.0 Radio. If you like what you hear, visit my website at elliekrug.com. Reach out to me. Email me at ellijkrug@gmail.com. I continue to hear from listeners, particularly about my show where I talked about President Joe giving up the ship. I've got a whole lot of listeners. They ain't happy about that. And I understand it, but I love hearing from my listeners. All right, we'll be back in a moment with an interview of Susan Mattson. You're going to love Susan hearing from Dr. Mattson. And there we go. We'll be back in a sec. And we're back. Ellie 2.0 Radio. Time for the big interview. I have with me here, and I'm thrilled about it, Dr. Susan Mattson. Dr. Mattson is the Karen Haight Huntsman Endowed Professor of Leadership in the John M. Huntsman School of Business at Utah State University. You may know the name John Huntsman. She's also the founding director of the Utah Women in Leadership Project, and she's leading a statewide social change movement titled A Bolder Way Forward. Dr. Mattson, Thank you so very much for coming to Ellie 2.0 Radio. I should add, you got your PhD at the University of Minnesota.
Yes,
and
I did.
And you formerly lived in White Bear Lake for a while. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. I've lived in California. I've lived in Portland, Oregon, a few different places. But I love the state of Utah, and we have good skiing going on this year.
I bet. Well, let me give you a little bit better background for our listeners. You came into my orbit because a friend of mine sent me a link to Salt Lake City Tribune story in which you wrote about you being someone who does similar work to me around diversity and inclusion, unconscious bias. And you wrote about something happening in Utah that was going to affect your work, but also going to affect all Utahns. Am I saying that right? It's a Utah,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. And so let's just kind of jump into it. What's happening in Utah? And has the legislation already passed?
Yes.
And how is it going to affect you?
So it's been a shock, and it's not a shock for many because there's conversations going on, and legislation has already been passed in certain states that limit DEI. So isn't it interesting, Ellie, that those of us in this space, up till what, 6-9 months ago, that wasn't necessarily a dirty word, and now
right.
The politics has changed that. But it's so triggering, and it didn't used to be as triggering.
Right.
But our legislature, right at the beginning of our 7-week session, this was just moving and shaking, and they did pass legislation to really, we don't have time to go into all the details, to limit basically DEI on campuses.
Okay.
And calling it unjust that it gives certain people too much opportunity and access. And we know the research that's not true. But really limiting that. So in my piece in the Salt Lake Tribune, I really just tackled one of the things in that bill. And that was around unconscious bias training or implicit bias training. Those kind of go together. And saying that no, we shouldn't be doing this on campus. So I really pushed back because I have studied this for years.
Yeah.
And I've taught unconscious bias training. And I wanted to educate the public that actually, if you do it well, and about 75% of unconscious bias training has been shown not to be done well.
Sure.
Not to be effective. So I studied for many years on how to do this in the right way. So I just explained that it's just unconscious bias training is about helping us be better people, less judgmental. And so that's what I focused on in that. And it's really unfortunate, the legislation, because a lot of people are moving, not just in Utah, this legislation forward out of fear.
Right.
Not based on research, not based on best practices, but fear.
Well, you're right. I mean, unconscious bias should be about, quote, how we judge all day, every day. And we do. I mean, you talk in your piece about how humans make all kinds of judgments about other people and other things like thousands of times a day. And
and
that's the reality, and as I related to you, pre-interview, I have a talk called Gray Area Thinking. The same lines, which where I talk about how we group and label humans, and then we attach things to that grouping and labeling. It's not only about skin color; it's about all kinds of things. That we do that, but I use the silly example when I start to introduce the topic. I ask, who here has ever, had a child, or adopted a kid. Somebody will raise their hand, and I'll say, when your kid came along, what was the very first question that you got asked? Almost everyone, not everyone though, but almost everyone says, well, I got asked if it's a boy or a girl, and I say, well, can you imagine what the reaction would be if your answer back was I had a human, and then eventually they'll tell me, well, I had a girl, and I'll say, okay, and the reason we need to know that you had a girl is because the color is purple, and had you had a boy, the color would be green, and everybody in the room, of course, is screaming at me in their heads, don't you know, Ellie, about blue and pink, and that's when I get them. Because what that is, obviously, right? That's about we get a human in a category and then we start attaching things to that category.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is just such an interesting conversation. But I tell you, to really become less judgmental, we need to understand our biases.
Yeah,
we just do. And most of our biases, I mean, the research tells us, you know, 11 million pieces of information come at us at any one time, and we're just really conscious and aware of 5 to 7 of those at any one time. So, but the research also tells us that the more we're working on bringing unconscious to consciousness, then we can do better job in terms of decision-making,
right.
All kinds of decision-making, not just to work.
Right.
But at home, the way we raise kids, I have 6 grandkids. We've got to challenge those assumptions all the time.
Tell me this. I mean, is the law has now passed in Utah.
Yes.
Does it also ban, you know, unconscious bias, DEI work in government offices as well, not just
yes,
with the university
that's true.
System? So this
yeah,
is way
state
bigger.
State government specifically.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, but that, I mean, that's a, I mean.
That's huge.
It is huge, you know, because these are the public servants, right, who are interacting with the public all the time. And or many of them are. And now they can't get trained on how maybe yeah. their biases will affect or interfere with those interactions.
And there's still some gray areas that I think universities and state offices will work with. Is it all because I read it again through the legislation and it wasn't 100% clear on is that just required? Are we going to be able to have at least some? And what we know, so we don't know that. So hopefully there will be some space for that. And what we know, Ellie, you know this already, that if you force someone, like we do with Title IX and sexual harassment and different things, if you force people to take certain trainings, it typically can backfire. I mean, unconscious bias, if you force people to do that kind of training, it's not going to help usually.
Well, excuse me, but the other issue is if they've outlawed one thing, okay,
yeah.
And then there is ambiguity about, is this also out? I mean, there's the chilling effect. Because
yeah.
no, and is there a penalty clause in the Utah legislation? I mean, for example, can somebody get fined or somebody be arrested?
Oh, good question.
You know,
I don't know if they went into that clarity. So sometimes when you make legislation, you open up the door
yeah.
for so many other conversations that could be good, but could not be good if you're trying to have those with people that don't understand unintended consequences.
Well, let's talk about a little bit about what's going on across the country. Okay. And, you know, this, you're absolutely right. Certainly a year ago, DEI and the work that I'm doing, you know, still continue to be well received. And, you know, my take is that after George Floyd was murdered, you know, and the angry person said, I don't want Ellie Krug to come. You know, the organization was saying, shut up, we're going to have Ellie Krug and we're going to go through this. Now, 4 years later, the angry person says, I don't want Ellie Krug to come. And everybody's like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? We can't have her come because we can't handle, you know, we're not going to have that kind of dispute. What happens if we have a problem, you know, kind of thing.
I think it's interesting on how, and I haven't had space to do this, but how we reframe, even most of my unconscious bias training that I've been doing, you could call it becoming a better human.
Sure.
And that probably would, because nobody leaves offended. Everybody's just like, wow, I didn't realize this, that we make judgments not just about And they're important. I shouldn't say just about race and gender, LGBTQ, disability, and so forth. But we make judgments all the time on our neighbors who don't take care of our yards.
We humans will make a judgment about anything and anyone. One of the things I've been talking about on this show, as you can imagine, okay, is what happens in, you know, this time next year, if the presidential election doesn't go for Joe, but instead goes for Don, and how it may be, because my concern is that there'll be a national ban.
on DEI-related topics, you know? And so even in the states, like here in Minnesota, you know, I don't foresee that there would be the state legislature doing what Utah is doing. But if it becomes a federal law, there's, you know, obviously no choice. Have you given any thought or consideration to that? Do you worry about it like Ellie Krug does, or you're like, ah, you know, whatever?
Well,
you've got a day job.
Yeah, it is interesting because in my mind, I'm like, oh no, that could never happen. But I never thought either, and I'm not a big fan, can I just say, of either Don or Joe. I think there's so many better people out there.
You could say that.
I have to say that I thought that they wouldn't be the only two in the election for the most part. So I, in my mind, I'm like, oh, that could never happen. But now after you bring it up, I'm like, oh my gosh, you don't know these days. Strange things happen. And it wouldn't make sense if people really, I'm a researcher, LA, you know that.
Yep.
That if you looked at the research, if you looked rationally at those things, you wouldn't think that would pass. But who knows these days? So I am slightly worried, but I'm still hoping something like that would not happen, because the research is clear. It is very clear that certain people in our state, people of color specifically, there are refugees and immigrants and people that their parents don't even speak English. And of course, we need to do work to, you know, have access and opportunity to certain groups, you know, over others like me, and my upbringing was more privileged. So to me, it's like just cut and dry that this is important to be able to challenge ourselves and our biases. But I am slightly concerned. I may continue to increase my concern as we move forward, but hopefully that would not happen, or else we're really stepping back into the past in lots and lots of years.
Well, you know, I mean, my take on all of this is it's about fear. It's about fear of change.
It is.
You know, it's about fear of other. And with what you just said about people of color, people who are different in Utah, you know, I've got to believe that there's a certain philosophy in Utah, as there is in other places. I mean, we talked about what's going on, you know, in like Wisconsin, you know, that people think that they are actually entitled to be at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
You know, and so why do I need to waste any time learning how to be welcoming to other people, because those people are lesser? You know, and this is, I mean, you know,
But I think even more, I see that people don't understand their privilege, and that privilege word is a hard word. Is I think some that I work with that I see are probably in the camp that you're talking about. But even more, it's people that say, you know, I don't have privilege.
I had to work hard.
That's it. You know, I just worked hard, and anybody could do it if they worked hard. And what we know, the more research we do, is that's not the case.
Yeah. I mean, let's let them just drive by, you know, as the police officer has stopped the, you know, the car with the black person, and they're just speeding by, you know. And and so, you know, this thing about fear, I'm just, it's so motivating for people. And, and you know, one of the things that I try and do is to cut through the fear. You know, I mean, you're looking at me right now, not that I make this all about me, but, you know, I mean, I look like a woman. You could nod your head about that. Okay. But I sound like this, a dude, right? And I realize that when I start out with a room like I did last week with a bunch of mainly white men, you know, who run steel manufacturing plants, okay, I know that they're trying to figure out what the heck I am when I start to speak, okay?
Yeah.
But I talk about the power of human familiarity. That's really what this work is about. That's how we get past our unconscious bias. We just start to become familiar with what is different. You know, and by the end of the talk, you know, 2 hours later or whatever it is, in Dallas, it was 6 hours. You know, by the end of the talk, I'm like, hey, how are you doing with the boys? You know, and people are like,
Give me the thumbs up.
Yeah.
I don't even
yeah.
hear it anymore, Ellie. You know, and that's so, but we had to get past the fear of what is this and all of that stuff. And I am just so concerned that this fear is going to outlast you and me in terms
yeah,
of our abilities.
You know, in terms of fear, what we know is making decisions, well, with safety, with fear, yes. You know, there's safety where your kid or somebody, you've got to make decisions on that. But on other things, oftentimes when we're in that fear zone, we're not using good logic. We're not using the best research. We're not using those best right. practices and different things. And that is dangerous oh. in true decision-making. And so taking a step back and saying, let's let that fear sit there, just separate. Let's go with truly good decision-making, critical thinking to make these decisions. Mm. And let's listen. Don't you think, Ellie, the more that we can teach ourselves and others to listen better, listen, really active listening where we're not judging all the time. I used to be a lot more judgmental. I'm still judgmental. We all are because we have unconscious biases. But it's amazing when you start listening more in good ways.
No, no. I agree with you 100%. The problem is the fear is churned, okay?
It is.
You know,
it
so
is.
It's not like it just sits there. It is being exploited time and time again, multiple times a day, you know, and it's just causing people to shut down.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
You know, and I'll tell you, and maybe, and I know that we got like a minute left with you, okay? But, you know, my work is focused not on the Twin Cities. It's not focused on Chicago. It's not focused on Denver. My work is focused in greater Minnesota, in greater South Dakota, in places where I'm the first, you know, trans person they've ever met, but I'm also the first DEI person they've ever met, you know, because that, frankly, for me, that's where the work is needed, because those who are churning the fear, they're not from the cities. They're from outside the cities. And so for me, that's why I see that that's where it needs to be done.
And can I just add one more thing is when you really look at the rational population in general, there's so many moderates. I mean, we're not typically on the right or the left so strong, but those voices are the ones that oftentimes have the most fear.
Oh, yeah.
And are putting
most
that
vocal
out there.
And they're most vocal, you know?
Yeah. True.
Well, Dr. Mattson, I have had a really wonderful time talking with you. Thanks for making the time to come on LE 2.0 Radio. I wish you the best. Okay. I hope that you can continue to do your work and maybe our paths will cross sometime at some conference somewhere.
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's been wonderful to get to know you, Ellie. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, everyone. Dr. Susan Mattson, who is out of the Utah State University and doing the kind of work that I do and who is being vocal and pushing back against efforts to stop DEI in its tracks. All right. When we come back from our break, we will do a I'm going to give you the C block, and we're going to talk at length on the C block. We'll be back in a second. Thanks.
Keep beckoning to me. How long till my soul gets it right?
And we're back, LE 2.0 Radio. Dr. Susan Mattson, you know, what a nice person and interesting to hear what's going on in Utah, right? Which is going on all across the country in a variety of ways, which is why I've only given, three talks this year. So there you go. Okay, we're in my C block. And this is where I usually talk about my work. But today, I want to talk about something else. The death of a young human in Oklahoma. Now, some of you may know about Nex Benedict, a 16-year-old high school student in Owosso, Oklahoma. a city of 40,000 people northeast of Tulsa. Nex, N-E-X, identified as non-binary and used they and them or he and him pronouns. For months, Nex had been bullied by classmates because of their gender identity. And it was bullying by three girls in a girls' restroom in the Owosso High School that resulted in Nex being thrown to the floor and hit. This all happened the beginning of the second week of February. It also appears that school officials didn't call the police or medical personnel for Nex, despite the fact that Nex had bruises on their face and reported blacking out when on the floor. The school did call Nex's parent. Nex had been adopted by their grandmother, and the grandmother came to the school. The school gave Nex a 2-week suspension because of the fight. Grandmother took Nex because grandmother saw the bruises on Nex's face. The grandmother took Nex to the local hospital where Nex was checked out. And while Nex was literally laying in a hospital bed, I'm going to assume it was in the ER or something like that, while Nex was in the hospital bed, a police officer interviewed Nex, and there's a body camera video of the interview. In the video of that interview, Nex talked about being jumped. Okay, that's the phrase that Nex used, by three girls in the restroom. Nex was later released from the hospital and went to bed complaining that their head hurt. The next morning, Nex awoke. Started their day at home, and the Nex collapsed, I think in the living room, and stopped breathing. By the time emergency personnel arrived, Nex had died in the arms of Nex's grandmother. It was a tragedy and something that could have and should have been avoided. Now, an autopsy was conducted. We don't have the full autopsy results because the toxicology report won't come back for several weeks. There's been a big dispute about what the preliminary toxicology reports revealed. The Owosso Police Department has been in the middle of what sounds like a really crappy investigation, although they doubled up later on and went back to the scene and took a bunch of photos and some swabs and stuff like that. But the backdrop of everything that I'm telling you here is about what's going on in Oklahoma. In 2022, Oklahoma became the first state to prohibit non-binary people from getting gender markers on their birth certificates that corresponds with their gender identity, the gender identity being non-binary. And for those folks who don't know what non-binary means, it means humans who do not identify as either male or female. They just simply identify as human, which I think is like the most wonderful concept in the whole wide world. Okay, so Oklahoma says nope, you can't get you can't get non-binary gender marker on your birth certificate. The state also has outlawed gender affirming care. in the A block, I talked about what the risk of that in Texas is doing to Texas families. Okay, the state has required that students use restrooms that align with the gender identity assigned at birth, something that Nex, okay, was doing at the time Nex was attacked. So think about this, okay? The law says in Oklahoma, if you were assigned female at birth, regardless of how you identify, regardless of how you dress, regardless of how short your hair is or whatever, you got to go use the girls' restroom in the high school where you very well might get beat up. But Oklahoma doesn't care about that. Even more, this backdrop is even worse, okay? Because the state's superintendent of public education, so we are talking about the person at the top of the education pyramid in Oklahoma. It's a man named Ryan Walters. You're going to hear that name more and more as we go forward this year. Trust me. Ryan Walters, the state superintendent of public education, has issued rules against changing a student's gender markers in school. Okay, so in their school records. He's publicly stated, quote, "We're not going to lie to students and we're not going to push a gender ideology, unquote. Walters also recently named the architect of the anti-LGBTQ libs of TikTok. So you got this person who is just going after LGBTQ people on TikTok and another avenue. Ryan Walters has named this person a woman, okay? Now get this, to the Oklahoma Department of Education's Library Media Advisory Committee. So you got somebody that doesn't like LGBTQ plus people on the committee that's just figuring out what books should be in Oklahoma schools. You know where that's going to go, right? Okay. And so just this Wednesday, okay, an open letter was signed by 350 local, state, and national organizations. Hear that number again. 350 signing an open letter that's published in the Texas papers, or excuse me, the Oklahoma papers, that called for Walters to be removed from office because of the way that he treats and thinks of LGBTQ plus Oklahoma students, but particularly transgender and non-binary students. Walters responded to that letter by saying, quote, "I will not play woke gender games and I will not back down to a woke mob," unquote. All of that, okay? You've got a state passing laws against LGBTQ people, particularly targeting transgender humans. You've got a state superintendent of education on the record multiple times over and over again saying, you know, that essentially there's only one, you know, there's only gender is immutable, and essentially saying it's just woke ideology to in any way affirm somebody who has an identity that's different, a gender identity different than what they were assigned at birth. And when the state and the leader of the education system keeps saying those kinds of things, okay, it empowers people to believe that trans LGBTQ plus people, but particularly trans and non-binary people, are lesser. It does. It makes them feel, hey, you know, you don't have a right to exist. And I'm gonna, you know, for some of them, like maybe three girls in a restroom in a high school in Owosso, Oklahoma, deciding, hey, you know, I'm going to beat this kid up because the state's already told me that this kid is lesser than we are. And so, maybe we won't even get in trouble. And I don't know from the story whether those three girls are in trouble. I have no idea. I don't know if they've been suspended. I don't know if Nex was the only one suspended in the incident. I don't know that. I don't know. But it's just incredible. And this is just the sign of what's going on in America. All across. I am fed up with it. I am. And I am incredibly frustrated because I have no power to change anything. I've got this radio show podcast. Thank God I have that. But you know, the 40 of you that listen to this, okay? You know, unless one of you is a gazillionaire, I don't think we're going to go anywhere together. With great respect to all of you, I know that you're all passionate and you care about what Ellie Krug cares about. I realize that, okay? You know, I mean, I don't know. Listen, there's one more thing I want to bring up, and Dr. Mattson talked about it in her interview, which I thought was quite lovely. She and I talked about fear. And, I label it as fear of other. She talked about innate fear of many, many different things that we have. And I've just got to believe, okay, that what's going on in Oklahoma, what's going on in every other state where
trans and non-binary and LGBTQ plus people are being maligned. It's all about fear. It is. Fear that we're overtaking. You know, I was joking with somebody the other day, you know, I'm on my school board and everybody seems to be okay with Ellie Krug, the transgender person on the school board. I said, but what if we have 3 transgender people out of 7 on the school board? What's the reaction going to be then? You know, and so we've got it. How do we get past fear? You know, first of all, we label it. We got to talk about it, you know, and but as Dr. Mattson and I also spoke about, it's these people that are churning the fear. Ryan Walters, you know, the secretary of, you know, the superintendent of education in Oklahoma, talking about fear, the woke ideology. They're coming for your kids, the woke ideology. And I just got to tell you, I mean, I don't know how we're going to get past this fear. I don't. And it's literally killing us. It is. And I, you know, I shudder Dr. Mattson and I talked about, I shudder to think what a year from now may be like if the election goes to Don. I do. I mean, there'll be concentration camps. And it's not like I'm like making this up. I mean, it's part of the playbook that's been out there that we've been hearing. So next, Benedict, is this horrible tragedy. But they are a symptom of how bad things have gotten in America. And they're a warning sign of how much worse it very well may become. You know, is Ellie Krug going to be the last standing trans radio host in America? I don't know. I don't want to find out. Okay. On that note, a big thanks to my producer, Brett Johnson, who Brett has done some magic today, which you may not know about, but he's done it. And so thank you, Brett. And you, my listeners, okay? Please share about this show. Talk to others about it. You know, I mean, all 40 of you, if we could like double that, that would be like, think of that, okay? You know, I mean, it is the only transgender hosted radio show, podcast about idealism in the world. That I am confident of. All right. Between now and next, you hear my voice. Go out and do something good to make the world better. Okay? Ellie Krug, Ellie 2.0 Radio, over and out.